From Milroy to Middletown, Countersport to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal on this edition. Soon, you will be seeing self-driving vehicles on the nation's highways. Stephen Bloom and Rebecca Euler are here for a Capital Watch look at the technology and the impact. And the upcoming presidential election is not about Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. The real choice is between prosperity and socialistic ruin. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania is finally number one in the nation in something. The American Gaming Association's latest data shows the Commonwealth raked in $2.3 billion in casino tax revenue, besting runner-up New York by about $250 million. Only three states top $1 billion in casino tax revenue, with Nevada joining Pennsylvania and New York in that category. Pennsylvania and New York tax casinos at a much higher rate than Nevada, propelling them into the top spots. Of course, the massive tax revenue is made possible by residents losing money at the casinos. Labor Day has traditionally been the start of the general election campaign season, although this year's electioneering has been in high gear for months. President Joe Biden will join Vice President Kamala Harris in Pittsburgh for a Labor Day event. This despite the fact Harris has been attempting to distance herself from problems associated with Biden-Harris administration policies. Republicans, meanwhile, have finally jumped on the mail-in voting bandwagon. The Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee have launched a new website, SwampTheVoteUSA.com, which provides full access to Pennsylvania's mail-in voting toolkit. Voters can request a mail-in or absentee ballot via the site. In past elections, Democrats have far outpaced Republicans in mail-in voting, contributing significantly to Democrat victories. This cycle, Republicans are attempting to level the mail-in voting playing field. There is no doubt that Pennsylvania's U.S. Senator John Fetterman is one of the most colorful personalities in the upper chamber. Now he will be adding author to his list of accomplishments. Fetterman has inked a deal with Penguin Random House to write a memoir. It should provide new details into his rise from small-town mayor to one of the nation's most recognizable figures. No details yet as to when the book will be published. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Technology is slowly but steadily making self-driving vehicles practical. For a look at where development of such vehicles stands and the economic impact, we turn to our Capital Watch crew, Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association are here with a discussion. Steve?
Welcome to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on the state capital for you. I'm Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation, hosting for David Taylor. Joining me today is Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, it's good to be with you again.
It's great to be here with you, Steve.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you about a topic that I think is kind of interesting and maybe not one we've delved into previously. This summer, I was at a professional conference in Phoenix, Arizona. And there was an off-site dinner, and people had to get Ubers or taxis or whatever back to the hotel. And I happened to connect with one of the gentlemen who was organizing the event, and he said, "Hey, would you like to ride in a Waymo?"
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what a Waymo was, but I asked him a couple of questions, and he told me it's an autonomous driverless car. And as it turns out, Phoenix is one of three cities in the Southwest where they are testing on a large scale these Waymo driverless car taxis for public use. And so at first I thought, I don't want to take that risk. It kind of scared me. But yeah. Then I thought, you know, here we are. It's the 21st century. I got to get with the program.
Right, right.
And so I told him, yep, I'll get in there with you. And so he, myself, and another one of our colleagues got into this car that had pulled up on its own with no driver. There's a place for a driver. There's a steering wheel, but the car is parked there. Doors open. We get in. Doors close. off we are on our merry way.
Yeah.
And it was 30 minutes or so of a drive. We knew that was about a half hour drive through a number of different road conditions from the restaurant back to the hotel. And after the first minute or so, which I was admittedly nervous and kind of watching very carefully and clinging, and I had my seatbelt checked a couple of times, it started to get pretty calm and relaxing. I started to have confidence that this thing knew what it was doing, and it did. And it drove us very smoothly through, like I said, multiple types of traffic situations, from stop and go to fairly high speed on the highway, to small, to hotel driveways and restaurant driveways where you wouldn't necessarily think that the roads are that well marked if it had an internal map. I don't know how it does what it does, and that's not my point. My point is this is really transformational.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, this is clearly going to be the new wave of this type of transportation in terms of, like, you, instead of calling an Uber, you call for a Waymo or whatever company it is in your case, and this thing comes and gets you. But it got me thinking as well about maybe some bigger impacts when it comes to what happens to motor freight? What happens to large trucks? Are they able to do this? And I thought, well, who better to ask than Rebecca, runs the Motor Truck Association and knows all about these sorts of things. So really, Rebecca, I wanted to pick your brain on what you know about autonomous vehicles generally, and then specifically how it ties into our transportation infrastructure in this country and how we are going to be able to compete successfully with other countries.
Yeah, it's a great thing to talk about. And you've got one over on me, Steve, because I've never ridden in a Waymo or an autonomous vehicle. I know a lot about, I've learned a lot about autonomous vehicles when it comes to trucks, but I've never ridden in one before. So you have that on me for sure. But yeah, we can definitely talk about the impact on freight and the impact on the trucking industry generally. But on this show, we like to talk about Pennsylvania specifically, and I can talk about this industry in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania really was the birthplace of autonomous vehicles. At Carnegie Mellon University is sort of referred to as the birthplace for self-driving vehicles.
Interesting. Okay. Did not know that.
So we kind of have a little cottage industry in the Pittsburgh area, in the southwestern part of the state, where a lot of companies have sort of grown up around Carnegie Mellon and the surrounding universities in that area that have grown an expertise in this area. So, and the UPenn Robotics Research Program in Philadelphia also is a sort of part of this. So Pennsylvania actually is an emerging leader in the industry of autonomous trucking and vehicles generally. So it's kind of exciting. And just in 2022, there was a bill passed in the state legislature that sort of expanded on our ability to test and operate autonomous vehicles in the state. And it really made Pennsylvania a leader in research and development in the industry and gave us a path forward for driverless operations. So sort of set up a framework for certification of the vehicles and regulations and safety requirements through PennDOT. So that actually is in process right now. In fact, just a week or so ago, PennDOT published guidelines for the operation of highly automated vehicles. So those are actually on PennDOT's website now, and you can actually go look at that. Very good thing to talk about.
Well, that's fantastic. I was going to ask you, one of the questions I had in my mind was, what are some of the current obstacle the industry faces that's keeping it from expanding more rapidly? And I was going to ask specifically, are there government either laws or regulations on the books that are impeding the ability of the industry to start here in Pennsylvania and to grow here? But it sounds like it's the opposite. It sounds like for once, maybe we're on the right side of it.
Yeah, kind of we are. We're sort of on the right track. I think we have the regulatory framework in place to move forward. And I can talk about one of the areas where the industry is kind of focused, and we can go into some more detail about where this makes the most sense.
Please,
in trucking.
Yeah.
So one of the focuses of the industry is something called platooning, where you might have two or sometimes more than and two trucks going together, like platooning together. So in the first vehicle, you'll have an engaged live driver who's actually driving the vehicle, but the second or third vehicle will actually be more automated. There may be a driver in that second or third vehicle, but they're not sitting in the driver's seat, for example. They might be off duty, they might be sleeping. So that's something that's specifically permitted under the Pennsylvania statute. So we were kind of ahead of the game getting into that.
And the platooning then is, so if you did this with traditional drivers that were hands-on driving the vehicle and one is following the other, I know, at least personally for me, whenever I've tried to follow someone, it gets very hypnotizing and it's hard to stay awake and alert, whereas the autonomous driven vehicle would be able to follow another truck indefinitely.
Yeah.
Without getting bored.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest issues in trucking, and we do have a driver shortage in the industry right now of about 60,000 nationwide. The hardest jobs to fill in the trucking industry are long haul trucking jobs, because you're away from home for at least several nights at a time, sometimes a couple of weeks at a time, and it's hard to find drivers who are willing to be away from their families for that long. It's difficult being out on the road, of course. Those are hard jobs. They're difficult to fill. Autonomous trucking actually is the perfect solution to those types of jobs that are difficult to fill. So an autonomous truck doesn't have any limitations with its hours of service. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't have to, keep chugging coffee to stay awake on the road.
And no more logbooks, whether paper or electronic.
Right. Yes, exactly. So the regulations are slowly coming up to date with how does law enforcement and how do the departments of transportation around the country treat those trucks, because there are regulations, like you said, about logbooks and ELDs that truckers now use. How are they treated in autonomous vehicles that don't necessarily have drivers? And those regulations are all coming up to date now, and the industry is working through those. But it definitely makes sense in certain sectors of the industry, for sure. You had asked, you said you don't know how it all works. I do find it really fascinating how the technology works, really. And it really is, it's instead of a driver that's sensing and responding to, stimuli around him or her, it's the automated driving software that's in the vehicle that's controlled by other sources of electronic data, such as cameras, radar, LIDAR, and then satellites and advanced GPS systems. So it's really a system that works together to provide all that data.
You're listening to Capital Watch with myself, Steve Bloom, and Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, yeah, continue to talk about the technology. That's fascinating. So you're not talking about, it's not just following a GPS map. It's not just following one signal, it's actually multifaceted. And that, I guess, is a margin of safety?
Yeah, it's a layer. It's sort of a layered information system that, of course, the computer integrates all together and then is able to respond based on all the inputs that it's receiving. So, drivers are already familiar with a lot of the building blocks of these systems, like automatic emergency braking, lane departure warnings that we have in our cars already, electronic stability control, adaptive cruise control, which a lot of cars have today, and even some trucks have automated steering, that keep you in your lane, that sort of thing. So those are all sort of the first stage of automated, vehicle systems, and they're the building blocks for what build automated vehicles. So just sort of layer those systems on top of one another and improve them. And then you eventually build a system that can operate a vehicle.
And our economic system, our economy is built on obtaining additional value from the assets that we have, our capital assets. Think about this, the implications here in terms of you have a fleet of trucks that you could only use for certain hours and certain types of trips because of human restrictions, things
right.
that a human driver can't do. Now those same trucks are available for long-haul service, for doing jobs at times of the day when it would be difficult to hire a human driver. What are some of the other kind of implications of this for the economy? And is it going to balance out well Well, I'd be curious to know what your members think about this idea of the Motor Truck Association.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There are going to be specific operational conditions. It's not going to be every situation and role where these autonomous trucks are going to be used. It's going to be specific situations, specific routes that are well suited to automation. So they're going to, the industry for the foreseeable future is going to need drivers that are going to drive those more complex routes. For the most part, be doing that final mile delivery. So what the industry is really focused on is those sort of hub-to-hub highway driving routes that are mostly flat for now, mostly flat, mostly straight, and not the more complex sort of driving situations where we're going to need drivers for the foreseeable future. So I know there's some concern. Some people express some concern, like, are these going to be replacing our truck drivers? Are they going to put them out of work? There's no way that's going to happen. We're still going to need...
That's good to know.
Yeah, we're still going to need drivers for the foreseeable future, and there's no way that... autonomous trucks are going to replace truck drivers in our economy anytime soon. No doubt about that. But a lot of the other advantages that will help the economy and help the industry, obviously, like you touched on it, with not being constrained by a driver's times or hours of service that they can drive, but increased efficiency and productivity, getting things quicker to where they need to be, obviously helps, sort of ease some supply chain issues, the burden, and gets things where they need to be less expensively. Increase safety, actually, because although an autonomous truck isn't, the computer that's running it isn't as flexible or adaptable as a human brain, it actually can perceive hazards sooner and react quicker than a human brain can.
You know, that's when I was riding yeah. in the Waymo, that sort of started to occur to me when I saw all the gear on the top of the vehicle with the again, the LIDAR and the radar and all the signals it's receiving, and the fact that it can see in a 360-degree field of view.
Yeah.
It's looking, it knows what's behind it, it knows what's beside it, it knows what's coming up far down the road. I could see that this is going to be more safe than a human driver who has only got a narrow field of vision, who may have eye trouble, who may have gotten something in their eye, who may have, just had some sort of mishap, a bug loose in the car, when all those little things happen that a human driver can so easily become distracted.
Yep.
Where these type of accidents will never happen with an autonomous vehicle.
That's right. And a lot of the programming sort of focus, because safety obviously is the highest priority for all of the actors in the process here. But the highest focus has been on those sort of one-off incidents, like a dog runs into the road or a car pulls out in front of you. So things that don't happen so often, but the computer has to be able to adapt to it quickly. So those situations are what the software companies have been focused on, making sure the truck can handle those situations. And like I said, the computer can perceive it quicker and react quicker than a human can. So making sure that the system is able to handle that is an important part of it. Obviously, because I talked about efficiency already, that reduced costs is definitely something. Long-haul drivers, I talked about how it's difficult to recruit long-haul drivers. The turnover rate in that section of the industry is 100%, close to 100%. So having that churn in that part of the industry is difficult and expensive for companies to manage. And like I said, it's a really tough job. So if this option can take some of those tougher jobs away from humans and focus the human drivers that we have on the jobs where we really need them, which are out there too. So
it's a concept of highest and best use
of
the human capital as well as the financial capital and equipment capital that we have.
Yep. Exactly. And lastly, they're very fuel efficient because you have less variations in speed because they're fuel efficient, less emissions. So,
and gosh, I suppose the cabin of a self-driving truck driving down the highway doesn't have to be kept cold like it would be for
true.
Like you don't have to have the air conditioning on when you're crossing the desert.
Yeah.
I'm sure it can't get so hot, but you probably save a lot on just the efficiency of not having to heat the vehicle as much or keep it as cool in the summer.
Yep. Yeah. So that's absolutely true. And these autonomous trucks are operating right now in the southwestern part of the U.S. Where the weather's good. The regulatory environment has been favorable. For the most part, they're operating with drivers in the truck right now. But we're getting to the point where eventually we know that the innovation's continuing to happen in the industry. Over time here, we've gotten new materials, better electronics, advances in telecommunications, safety's gotten better. And that's all going to drive automation. So we know that eventually we'll get to the point where these trucks will be able to operate safely.
So let's just look ahead. Just look ahead 10 years, so 2034. You're driving down the Pennsylvania Turnpike. What are you going to see on the roads?
I don't know about 10 years. I'm not sure how far out we're looking, but I think that the most likely scenario is that some trucking companies will be able to use autonomous trucks to go hub to hub on highways. So you probably will at some point see, hubs that are right off the highway that you will see autonomous trucks driving to and from those hubs. And a driver will pick up at that hub and take it the final mile after that. So the most likely scenario will be that these autonomous trucks running on the highway between hubs.
Almost the way it is now for trucking with the break bulk terminals and how the drivers bring in their trailer, drive away, and then a smaller type of vehicle that's better for parking and maneuvering takes over the movement of the load there in the terminal. So the same concept, but sort of on a more long distance scale.
Right. Because the autonomous trucks can be programmed very easily for specific routes on specific roads. And I think that's where we'll see them used the most.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. This has been absolutely fascinating. And I'm glad that I had someone I could go to that had the kind of knowledge depth that you do on this topic. And it's exciting. And for once, Pennsylvania's regulators and government officials don't seem to be standing in the way of progress, which is maybe the biggest takeaway, something I'm personally very excited to hear. So any last thoughts on this topic before we wrap up our show?
Well, I mean, just to close out, just to put a cap on what you just said, they're thinking that this could be a $1 trillion global industry by the end of the decade. So even if Pennsylvania could capture 1% of that global market, we're looking at a $10 billion impact in Pennsylvania. Wow. So it is an amazing opportunity we have.
Well, that's so exciting. And that's all the time we have for today. Rebecca, where can folks find you to learn more?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
And as always, you can find me at commonwealthfoundation.org. For Rebecca Euler, I'm Steve Bloom. Please join us again next time for Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
For decades, Arlen Specter served as a U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania. He was at best a centrist, often a leftist, who, among other apostasies, voted against confirming Ronald Reagan's appointment of Judge Robert Bork to the Supreme Court of the United States. Specter voted that way for most of the first 4 years of each 6-year Senate term, but tacked back to the middle in the 2 years leading up to his re-election campaign. That happened repeatedly, with the maneuver facetiously being referred to as the Specter Shuffle. It was not, however, a tactic employed only by Specter. Candidates in the Republican primary typically emphasized their conservative credentials, then moved to the middle to attract independent voters in the general election. Democrat candidates tilt left in the primary, then likewise usually moderate in the general election to broaden their constituency. The party nominating conventions are behind us, and the legacy news media would have us believe that Kamala Harris is indeed moving to the middle, dismissing as history the many radical positions she took in her aborted 2020 presidential campaign and espoused thereafter until the coup against Joe Biden installed her as the new Democrat nominee. Harris has not moved to the middle. In fact, she has moved even further to the left. Her first major decision was to pick Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her vice presidential running mate. Walz is one of the most progressive, read radical left, governors in the nation. In picking Walz, Harris bypassed both Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who fancies himself a moderate, and U.S. Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona. The decision is politically questionable. Not only is the Walz choice an ideological double down, but unlike Shapiro or Kelly, who could have made a difference in battleground states, Walz, Minnesota is safely in the Democrat column. In short, Walz brings neither ideological diversity nor electoral votes to the table. Harris has cocooned herself behind staff and teleprompters, avoiding unscripted moments. Her one policy speech was a disaster. She uncorked the historically discredited concept of price controls, offered up a $25,000 payoff to prospective homebuyers at taxpayer expense, and generally put forth a socialist agenda. Her ideas were so bad, even reliably left-wing media outlets like the Washington Post panned her proposals. Despite the spin, Harris has, in fact, not only failed to move to the middle, she has moved further to the left, seemingly abandoning the shrinking but critical block of moderate voters. Setting forth an economic agenda straight out of her Marxist father's playbook is not a path toward easing the economic pain caused by the already statist policies of the Biden-Harris administration. I was having difficulty understanding what appears to be political malpractice, but former state representative Frank Ryan put it into perspective. California is the only state where Kamala Harris has ever been on the ballot. California has a jungle primary in which the top two vote-getters, regardless of party, advance to the general election. In the Golden State, that's usually, not always, but usually two Democrats. Therefore, there's no need for general election moderation. In fact, general election candidates in California often move even further left to out-left flank their opponents. Her abrupt promotion to the top of the Democrat ticket seems to have left Harris unprepared for the vastly different landscape of a national election. Worse, the battleground states tend to be relatively moderate. Penns Woods in particular has a history of generally, but not always, awarding the general election victory to the more moderate candidate. Harris cannot dodge unscripted moments forever. Her penchant for word salads that make Joe Biden look coherent are bound to surface as she attempts to explain complex economic concepts. The debates will be problematic for her as she is captive of extreme socialist economic positions required by her base, but unappealing to moderates. As Harris's summer of joy runs into the reality of a presidential election campaign, she will now be forced to both defend her failed policies of the last 3 years and her own economic extremism. As iconic political consultant James Carville once famously said, "It's the economy, stupid." This election is not about either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. The real choice is between the proven prosperity of capitalism and an accelerated path toward socialistic ruin. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIOO-FM, WHYL-FM, and Red 102.3, all in the Carlisle area. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.